This is PS You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And Shelby is always trying to get me and her children onto a very strict, workout regimen, no carbs for us. Really, you know, she is a dictator when it comes
immediately,
to exercise.
Immediately calling CPS, immediately quitting my job and divorcing that man. I cannot believe, as soon as that happened, I was like, no, this is over. I'm out. This is no longer enjoyable for me. Bad parents.
Okay, well,
War of the Roses, me versus that dad. I'm done. I'm pulling the trigger. I'm lighting the house on fire. I don't care.
We will get into all of the roses because I also want to discuss this in relationship to you actually having a husband and marital woes.
Yeah, very relatable. Yeah.
But first, there is new Taylor Swift news, I guess. I'm trying to think. We haven't recorded since she got engaged.
No, I do not think so. I think this is the first one. It's been kind of weird. I don't remember why we've been behind on episodes, whatever, story of our life. But
you were traveling here. Your daughter was sick.
Yes.
Because you pushed her too hard in the Olympic level training that you've been executing.
I made her sign up to an agreement.
Yes.
So Taylor Swift got engaged. It happened. It finally happened. I saw you. You have a Substack.
Congrats. I have a Substack. Thank you. I was like, I can't let Shelby be the only cool person here.
I've neglected mine. It's motivating me to pick mine up again because I'm like, oh, well, Matt can't take this from me.
You're the Substack queen.
Yeah, that was my niche, and now you're treading on my. It's like when. It's like you're Khloe Kardashian and you're coming for me pretending you're the fashion queen now. And it's like, no, I'm Kim. I was here first. I take the crown. But you should plug it.
No, I would think it's more like you're a famous architect and I'm sort of your like home cook wife. But then at some point I'm going to make it big and your Substack is going to come crashing down.
Yeah. That's accurate, but
that's another the roses reference for everybody.
Plug it for our listeners.
Okay, yes. So I have a Substack. It is called The Report Card.
Cute.
You're such
an English teacher.
Thank you. Yes, I am an English teacher. I'm looking for my gym teacher.
PE teacher. I'm an English teacher, and I'm marrying the gym teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, I think that's it.
It's called The Report Card. This all kind of started because I wanted to, like, obviously I write for work and obviously I have this podcast also. So two wonderful outlets for my unhinged thoughts. However, I feel like there's niche things on the internet that I really can't write about for work because they're not mainstream enough. Either like you don't watch them or they're like, I don't know. I wanted to be able to write about like random kind of stuff. And so I was trying to, and also Shelby has a Substack and so does everybody else. And I keep seeing all of these articles that are like the coolest people have a Substack, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, I need to be on this space. Also Substack, kind of like Twitter randomly. Also, there's like a
Twitter, there's a social,
which
it's
I
nice.
Didn't really realize. But,
everyone's pretty nice on it so far from my neck of the woods.
So and also I do love a new social media platform.
I know.
It's You're one of my favorite adopter. Things. I love early adopting.
Well, except here, like, this is pretty old. But yeah, you caught up to it finally.
Yeah. I mean, but I feel like Substack is not like mainstream. I mean, maybe it's mainstream for like writerly kind of people, but it's not like I feel confident that my parents have no idea what Substack is.
Oh, okay. If they're the measuring stick, sure. Yeah, it's definitely.
But like they know what, but like
up and coming.
Substack is before, like, it is.
Do your parents know what WordPress is? You know, are they aware of Blogger?
They're aware of blogs. But I feel like we are now in the era with Substack of like TikTok pre-pandemic, which I also loved.
Substack seems pretty mainstream to me, but I think it's all going to be confirmation bias, because the people I like have Substacks,
right?
Because I like the sort of people who have
Hard
to say. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty established app is my point, but okay. I'm glad you're on it.
It's new to me. I'm still excited about it. But I feel like a lot of people on Substack just sort of write essays. I knew about myself that if that was the avenue that I went down, I would just end up not doing it. Like, I needed a little bit more structure, I think, to mine. And as someone who came from BuzzFeed, it's like, obviously we have to have some sort of gimmick going on here. We can't just have this be normal. So, so it's called the report card. I came up with, I think there's 5 or 6 categories that I have every week that I, just slot the random happenings in.
Yeah.
So giving out grades, mostly good grades, 1 failing grade.
You got to keep that curve strong,
Because I want it to be largely positive try to be. Yeah. I don't want to just be like shitting on things all the time.
Right.
But I do feel like, sometimes there's stuff that you need to get off your chest. And so the different categories, I've done it 2 weeks now. I'm enjoying it. Yeah. So we'll see how this goes. But I did have to discuss Taylor Swift engagement. I felt like that was the pop culture happening last week. So I needed to address it. And also I felt like it really didn't fit into any of the other categories, and I felt like if I made a headline about how annoying it was, that would get a lot of engagement, which is what you need to start.
So I said, let's
rage bait to the top.
Yeah, exactly. It was beautifully done, excellently executed. Wouldn't have expected anything less from you.
Right.
Completely over the top opinion. Absolutely no nuance, and off in the wrong take. I think that really captured. what you're bringing to the table.
How dare you? How dare you? Just because I did not get 1 emoji reference that was in Taylor Swift's engagement post caption does not mean that I'm not qualified to speak on such matters.
You have your opinion. I mean, that's the thing. So Taylor Swift gets engaged. Honestly, I was surprised she posted it. I think in the end, it makes sense that she did. Is your whole like, usually you have these reported through People Exclusive, or, there's a big to-do of their management being the ones to announce it. So Taylor Swift just kind of casually posting it on her Instagram was, I think, unexpected, even if the engagement itself was probably, seen around the corner. And it was funny because everyone reached out to me to see how I was feeling. And everyone was like, I'm happy when people are happy. I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. And it was a very stylistically, a very beautiful engagement post. If that was my friend, I'd be like, oh my God, this is gorgeous. Love it. So happy for you. I don't feel that same way about her as a human being I need to interact with or comment on or platform in any way, because she's good, she's got what she's want. My strongest feeling was that I just hated the ring. I hated the ring so much. I think it's hideous. I think it's absolutely disgusting to look at. So I would give it an F for that. I think
it's that grand. Makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. Like her style, her taste level, bad.
Yeah.
And I saw a TikTok that was like a stitch, and it was somebody being like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see Taylor Swift's wedding dress. Like, she's going to be the most beautiful bride in the world or whatever. And then it was stitched to somebody being like, girl, I can tell you now, the dress is going to be bad. The dress will be bad. She is bad at picking out.
I hope it's like that's the time where she gets a specialized stylist, right? So she won't be leaning on her usual crew, right? You'd have to hope. You'd have to hope.
I don't think so, because the thing is, like, I think that if you're just going to a random red carpet, you tell your stylist, you know, come up with something like, oh yeah, yeah sure, yeah. great. They have a little bit more sway because the event isn't as big. I think with her wedding, she is going to be like, I am picking out my dress. Like, it will be the dress that she likes the best. And I cannot imagine that really, like,
this is interesting.
Working.
And she's had like a couple, they're rare, but she's had a few, you know, stunning moments. So maybe this will be the one.
But you would think that that would maybe about the ring as well.
I know. Well, you can blame that on Travis Kelce, who's only ever seen like game day jewelry. You know, he's getting his Super Bowl ring and he's like, this seems like the right size and shape. Like, let's do it.
I know that she had he did not pick out this ring by himself. There was involvement.
Yeah. No. So she's engaged. I'm curious to see how it plays out. There's a lot of like fan theories about, oh my gosh, this happened right after the podcast. How romantic. His dad released some of the tea around like the actual, like it, they had gotten engaged a couple weeks before actually posting it. And just kind of I'm so fascinated by, and I think you are too, by the brand of it all. Like, I think, like I was saying, her posting it on Instagram was very hashtag relatable. Very like one of the people, and having it be sort of this simple thing, like it's not Kanye proposing with a 50-piece orchestra in the middle of a Super Bowl stadium. It's like his backyard, blah blah blah. So simple, straightforward. The dress, oh my gosh, it's affordable. So it all like plays into this. And then I also found it, I don't know if this is too conspiracy-y, but Travis Kelce came out the next day with an American Eagle line. Did you see this? A brand deal with American Eagle.
Are they wearing American Eagle in this?
No, but uh-oh. I think the proposal buried a lot of negative press around like, wait a second, I thought we hated American Eagle.
Oh, because of the Sydney Sweeney thing.
Yeah. Because of the Sydney Sweeney thing.
I don't, like, I guess maybe like, if you're like, I can't imagine that was the primary reasoning, right. But I do think if like, okay, yeah, you're trying to figure out when to do this engagement. And then you think, oh crap, this American Eagle line that we thought was going to be a good big deal is now sort of like in the toilet. Like maybe let's announce this right before. I will say this though, American Eagle is going full on ahead with the Sydney Sweeney jeans thing, because they have an ad in Times Square that's her like massive in the jeans. Like, I
that was their major year.
Right. You know, but I thought that they might be like, you know, I thought like with the Cracker Barrel thing, ugh, where they were like, you know what? Never mind. We'll go back to the old logo, that there might be some like, at least a little bit of a step back for the Sydney Sweeney, but they're like, no.
It's the audience that made Cracker Barrel fold is the same one letting American Eagle keep it. So
it was Republicans who made Cracker Barrel change their logo?
Yes. To change it back. Because the conservatives were mad that they removed the white guy, that they removed the cracker from the Cracker Barrel logo.
I think
the conservatives got pissed. They're like, oh, woke culture refuses to let white man stay on here, old timer, blah blah blah. So Cracker Barrel sent an apology direct to President Trump and was like, oh, we hear you, we see you, thank you for using your platform to call us out, we'll definitely bring the old logo back.
Okay,
normal people didn't care about this.
I think I'm on a different side of Twitter then, because my followers did care about, or like the people I was following did care about this, but like not in a political way at all, but in like a
nostalgia way.
And I saw like several tweets that were from Black people that were like, oh, now they're getting the cracker off the one thing that we had going for us, now they're getting rid of. So Yeah. When I saw they changed it, I didn't realize that Trump was involved at all. I was I was like, great.
Like, the people did it.
They're listening to millennials.
Power to the people. Maybe, rise up, use your voice. Your platform matters.
Maybe this was actually the bipartisan agenda that we finally needed.
Everybody descended upon.
Well, I'm pro the old Cracker Barrel logo. I will come out and say
look at that. So. You and Trump, you're getting more and more in common every.
In general, I get annoyed when brands change their logo no reason.
Like 7Up, it was hideous. Or what was it?
The orange juice still brand. Annoyed about Instagram. I'm like, why? It's been 10 years and I'm still like, why don't we just have the original Instagram logo, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's like I don't understand the point of that, especially you know so much branding goes into it. But okay, wait, the Taylor Swift of it all.
Did you have more to say?
I was just going to say the thing that annoyed me that I talked about in my Substack, it was the English teacher aspect of it. So the caption is your English teacher and your gym teacher are getting married.
Yeah, and this is where you were very just like wrong.
I was like, this woman is not giving English teacher to me.
That's because you just don't like her. I mean, she reads. I don't think you can say that just because she makes a Hamlet reference. You're like, ugh, basic. Like, every English teacher is a basic bitch. Like, hello.
I feel like the English teacher role is like such a like sacred, almost priest-like duty. You know,
watched John Proctor as the villain, and you're saying that with your full chest right now.
Okay, calm down. I'm talking about the female English teacher for the record. I would like to say that there are so many gay people who like the lesbians, gay people, trans people, the whole LGBT community who find such like community and safety in their English teacher growing up. I feel like that is, I think that across the spectrum of teachers, like that's the one who you learn from. That's the one who like fosters these ideas and teaches you things. There's so many memes online that are like, oh, this is like so-and-so and their English teacher. Like literally whenever a gay person takes a picture with an older person, it's always like, oh, it's blah, 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 and their English teacher. Like the English teacher for me is like such a pivotal figure in life. And I think to be co-opting that branding when I don't think you deserve it,
it's because a bit annoying. That's how the fans talk about her. Like, she didn't come up with that coy.
She is saying stuff. Fans are talking
fans
about
fans are like, oh my God. Yes, it's like, oh, bringing the dictionary to class and it's release day. Like, that's been the gist of it for the last five albums or whatever, because she puts in like, loquaciously or something in a song. So it is like there's this fandom joke or awareness of like Taylor Swift isn't writing your bippy boppy whatever, you know, shallow pop. That's the idea, is that she's elevated it to have this sort of like highbrow referential literary penmanship to it, and that's like her whole brand. So like, yeah, technically if you step back, you're like, if I have to assign celebrities to what class they're teaching in high school, you might put her as a music teacher because she has that cringe, she has that earnestness, she has that like, oh yes, everyone hold hands, we're doing our exercise today.
She does.
But in the fandom, in the idea of her place in music as it is today and pop stardom as it is today, she is the like literary type, you know. She's not Sabrina Carpenter singing about dicks.
Again,
she's singing about the poets.
I feel like that if I was to assign her like a writer, she is giving like Colleen Hoover energy. It's like the people who read Colleen Hoover think Colleen Hoover is
It's deep. Just not fair. It's just not true. I think you have your blind spot. Like, you don't like her, and that's fine. But like, her musical writing skills are not Colleen Hoover, like Wattpad fanfic style stuff. Like, she writes good music. She writes good stories. The Last Great American Dynasty takes you on a journey, and there's enough imagery and whatever that like ties in an interesting and provocative way. And like, you can say you don't like it, or that it's not measuring up to like whatever indie.
But again, like, I don't, like, if she said like, oh, I'm the poetry teacher or something, like, maybe. But I'm like, I'm not going with this English teacher thing. I don't care. I don't like her.
Yeah.
The two things can be true. I can be right and not like her at the same time.
But you can also be wrong, because it's very much about, like,
if this is a reference how her to fans fandom, have been
talking about them. It's like, oh my gosh, the English teacher found the gym teacher. Fans. That's why she used the dynamite emoji, because the fans are like, TNT. Like, it's like, she is presenting as a brand.
He is giving gym teacher energy 1,000%. And that is correct. That I will agree with. So she got at least half of the caption correctly.
Yeah.
I guess she got two thirds of it correct, because, you know, the gym teacher, and they are getting married, but the English teacher, I have umbrage with. Anyways, clearly not going to be so convincing funny. You, one of the sycophants.
As someone who's had plenty of English teachers, all of them women, I think she lines up there pretty well with the depth and capabilities of most. So I think her handling of illusion versus illusion is very much on par with English teachers from my day. So
I guess maybe English teachers are different in Utah than in Michigan. You know, being an English teacher used to mean something to me. Yeah, but in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they're just letting any old person be an English teacher.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyways, since we just had our own battle royale, should we talk about the marital symmetry of the roses?
Of the roses? Yes. Let's talk about the roses, which is based on a older film from 1989. Have you ever seen this? The War of the Roses?
Which is based on a book.
Yes. Have you read the book?
I think I saw the movie, because after I Googled this, I was like, oh, okay, that there's some familiarities here to this Wikipedia article, but I don't remember it. Because it's it's the woman from A Simple Wish, right?
I don't know what that is. It's Kathleen Turner.
Kathleen Turner.
Michael Douglas and Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito, yeah.
I don't know which role A Simple Wish? Danny DeVito have?
Oh. Danny DeVito, I thought, was the husband. No? Or is he the friend? He's like the lawyer friend.
I guess so.
I don't remember.
Michael Douglas is the lead, so I assume that he would be the husband.
Right. Okay, yeah. Oh, well, I think she has an affair in that one.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so this is a story, tale as old as time. And it's been promoted a lot. Like, this is Benedict Cumberbatch. It's Olivia Colman. I mean, it's a big cast of comedians, too. You have Andy Samberg and
Allison Janney, Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon, yeah. Yeah. So
the guy from Sex Education doing an American accent, which I'm like, no, no. Absolutely not. It's like, why?
Wait, doesn't he do an American accent in Barbie? Is he American?
Barbie doesn't count, like, because Barbie, Barbie he was in like 2 seconds of. So I didn't. Okay. If I had sat here and you'd asked me to list people who are in Barbie, like, I probably wouldn't even remember that he was in it. So
that's because you're a hater.
How many scenes does he have? Like,
I mean, he's one of the main Kens. Like, he's, when Ken is with Kens, he's there. He's probably the third most important Ken.
Oh, the third most important Ken. Yeah. Well, yes, of course I remember that.
I mean, what do you want me to do when the cast is all Kens and all Barbies? So 3 out of 50 is still a pretty good billing. Like,
I guess. He's not Midge. He's no Keith or whatever Michael Cera's character's name was.
Alan.
Alan. The gay one.
Anyways, so this is promoted as like a punchy marital, you know, it's sort of like
a, it's like a divorce comedy.
Yeah. So I went into it and I was not tuned in to the tone. I was not getting it. And I think, stepping back, the issue was that Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman have such great chemistry in this movie. And so even when they're firing off each other, like in the worst way, you're still kind of like rooting for them because they're so likable.
Yeah.
As entities. And together. And so the fact that this was like going the way it was and ending the way it was, I was like, what am I supposed to feel here? Because mostly I'm just like annoyed. Which I realize now was not the point. It was like a dark comedy. I was meant to find fun in this fighting and this bickering and this sort of like stubbornness. And I was supposed to be like, oh, it's exaggerated marriage. Ha ha. But I was just like, wow, this is like Marriage Story on steroids. And they're both fucking losers for not just getting over it sooner.
Wait, you thought it was, did you think it was supposed to be a rom-com or you thought it was supposed to be a drama?
No, I thought it was like a comedy. And I guess I was like, I figured, I hadn't like put a lot of thought into it. It wasn't like I was like, okay, they're going to work it out in the end. But it was more, I thought the humor would be at least more like I want to say over the top. Obviously, it is over the top. But there was something like really real about the first 2 hours or whatever, and then it ups the ante to like bringing out the guns and the poisons and all of this. But for the first bit, it just seems like sad. You're sad that this couple is like missing each other and that they should be able to figure it out pretty easily if they just talk to one another. So it's like hard because it seems like the relationship was good, is good, but they just get stuck in their ways in specific like moments. And then suddenly we're like rooting for them to kill each other. It just like didn't, I couldn't figure out like if I was meant to hate them from the get-go or if I was meant to like have fun taking the piss out of them because they're like ruining their lives and their children's lives. I don't know. I couldn't like, I was not enjoying this film. I'm sorry to say.
You sent me a text after you watched it that was like, well, that was a weird movie.
That was like 20 minutes in. I was like, I don't get this tone.
I was like, what is she talking about? I was like, I got this movie right away. I do think that this movie is exactly my sense of humor. I was laughing the whole time. I thought it was so funny. I was really dialed in with what they were doing.
Yeah.
Like, I think the like escalating insults and the sort of like prank war kind of stuff about it.
But that's all in the last like 20 minutes.
I mean, like, yes. And like, yes. But I think their dialogue is pretty
There's a lot of time. Yes,
like,
yeah.
The writing, I think, is really good in, like, the dialogue that they have. And I like their friends. And yeah, I mean, I think you are rooting for them the whole time. Like, you can tell even when they're mad at each other, they're still, like, into each other. It sort of has, like, a, I don't know, like a revenge sex kind of quality to it at certain points, where they're kind of like a little bit turned on by the fact that they're both like these people who are willing to kind of be nasty to each other, which I also think is a little bit like a trait that I have. Like, I think if somebody can really read me well, that's like endearing to me because it means they're smart. Two, it means that they're like paying attention. You know what I mean? Like, I sort of feel like that's in some ways like why we get along. Whereas, yeah, if it's like, if you can't make a good sort of like roast of somebody, then that means you don't know them well enough. You don't know like their, you know, their little quirks and stuff. So So I was rooting for them. And then I think the end where they kind of do sort of reckon, like they both like take their crazy to 11 and they're like, wait, like we're actually the only two people in the world who are this crazy. Like I'm like, yes, like this is why I'm with you all along. Is great. And then the sort of button at the end of the movie I thought was funny. I loved it.
Then they die.
Yeah, then they die. But they die having known that they and traumatizing their children forever. Yeah, the way they treat their children, not great parenting, but I did think it was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought their friends were funny, and the fact that like she names the restaurant what, like I've got crabs or you've yeah, got crabs you've or got whatever. Crabs, I thought, yeah. I really enjoyed this, and I was locked in on the tone from the jump. So I'm sorry that you didn't, but also this movie has not gotten great reviews and has not made very much money. So I do think I'm sort of out on an island a bit. Yeah. I wonder if this did better in the UK.
Well, I think it's almost like the couple of reviews I saw were like, to your point, it's sharply written. They have a lot of, everyone's having a lot of fun. And the viciousness is fascinating to watch. Like, it's not misery porn. But I think that it does become difficult when it's like so much of the movie is them in a good place that you're like, guys, like, this is pretty easy stuff to fix. Like, this is pretty easy. Whereas in the original film, it's like they are bad. They have nothing but toxicity. And so they hate each other, they hate themselves, and you as the audience hate them. So it's funny, but it's more like pointing at them and laughing. Whereas this is like, they're so charming, they're so fun. And you're like, yeah, these people make sense together. And so I feel like if it had ended where it did, but without the, like, they die, I think I would have been better with it. But the weird tonal shift for me was, like, he saves the whale and he realizes he doesn't want to be with his wife. And then they start their weird, like, childish, you know, prank war. And then they kill each other. So it's just, like, it was sort of like, okay, you guys are acting unhinged, but we've had 2 hours of both of you seeming to want to make this work. So it was kind of like, you can't make me root for them, but then also expect me to want their downfall gleefully.
Well, I mean, I feel like it was kind of unhinged the whole time, because the thing about the like the museum imploding and the storm is wild, and then even like the saving the whale scene is funny that like this person would be so taken with this, and that like that would be the, I felt like that was such like middle-aged man in a midlife crisis kind of vibe to be like, oh yeah, I saved this whale and it like awoken something in me. I also thought it had really interesting sort of commentary on what a, like how a couple can seem really strong and like they're both really sort of invested, but when the man has to be sort of like the beta, quote unquote, in the relationship, like even if he seems like a lovely person, like there's just so much toxic masculinity like baked into people that even as much as he loves her, and even as much as he loves the kids, and even as much as he like is safe financially, he still like cannot like resist this like sort of nasty toxic masculinity that's inside him that makes him turn the children into these like kind of monsters and ruin their relationship. So I thought it was also like,
that was my issue too.
Into that too.
But it was like, it's written by a man, and so there is like a resistance for me to think they're equally bad or equally like bringing their own mess. Like,
you think he
was annoying me from him? No, he was annoying me from day one.
Oh, like, yes.
And I just don't think, I think that there's ways to, every person is going to like interpret who's at fault or whatever differently. but like I'm resistant to it. It gives me the same sort of ick of something like Marriage Story or The Last 5 Years, where a guy's like, I'm going to tell this story. And then it's trying to give nuance to this man, but it's like, no, 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 I don't agree. See, and that's my own bias.
I feel like it gave more nuance to her than it did to him. Like, I thought that this movie seemed a lot tougher on him than it did on her, primarily because of the stuff with the kids.
Yes, but I think it seemed more like he also got the spotlight. It was a lot about his hubris, but that just meant we were stuck in his POV. You know what I mean? Like, she was just sort of this flighty little, everything's working out for me, kind of like side character. And it was a lot of time in his head with his like rants and feelings of inadequacy or whatever. And I was just like, I just don't like hearing men.
Yeah, but I think
mansplain their manhood to me.
But I think like it is taking that to task. Like,
maybe.
I did not get this feeling from watching this that like he was, I don't know, that he was even too sympathetic to Benedict Cumberbatch's character. Like, I think he was right. Kind of showing, I mean, like how ridiculous it is that he is so, you know, put out by the fact that he, you know, that he had like one little thing go wrong in this like life that is so wonderful, and it basically like derailed the whole thing. Right. And the thing that went wrong was directly the responsibility of him being sort of like a stuck up asshole in the first place. And she's like so lovely, and the good things that happen to her sort of happen accidentally because she is a nice person, and then she gets sort of dragged down into the mire with him. And I guess like we could have had more sort of from her perspective, but I feel like if you're a man and you're writing this story and you know that the point of it is that the man is bad, you like, I don't know, I guess spend more time making the man look bad than trying to make the woman look good. I don't know.
But don't you think it was sort of like there was sort of these people are both unhinged. Like, it wasn't like, oh, she's a victim to his own ego. Like,
I mean, like, they, I think that they both, like, once they sort of, like, lock in, they both, like, elevate at the same time because she's mad at him and he's mad at her. But I think that it's his fault that that is happening. Right. Like, I think that she's just reacting to him. Yeah. I don't think that this is at least in my watching it, I wasn't like, oh, both of these people are bad communicators, and so that's what, which I feel like with Marriage Story, it was more like that, of sort of like, oh, well, both of these people are kind of flawed, and we should be like sort of looking at both sides the same, where I think, which gave Adam Driver's character more sympathy than he, you know, needed, because I think it was directly about Noah Baumbach's like own divorce, basically, where this, you know, is not based on the Tony McNamara, the writer's like real life. And I think that like the thing that sets all of this off is the museum collapsing. And that breaks down because Benedict Cumberbatch wants to put the sail on the top when everyone's like, no, don't put the sail on the top. And then he is just like incapable of figuring out what to do with it. And and even when, like, even sort of early on when Olivia Colman is like, look, like, you know, like, I don't have to do this, but I can do this, like, just to get us by, to make some extra money, whatever. Like, he's even resistant to it then. Like, there's some, he has to be kind of like the one in charge. And then he's so bitter towards her as she's getting these good things, which is not how she was towards him when he was getting a good thing.
I know, but then why must she too die? I think it should have ended with her
shooting him.
Yeah, something. She should have just gotten the kids. Like, I'm sorry, once you franchise 50 things globally, you're not doing your cooking day to day, you know? Like, she could have been, I'm not saying, I'm not going to get into nitpicky. Like, I know this was operatic. But what I'm saying is, then why is she dying? Why is she sticking around for this loser? Like, if he's meant to be portrayed as the loser, who's always gonna resent her, hold her back, or whatever.
Because I think that they do have really good like chemistry with each other. Like, and that they, that there are lots of pieces that they do really like, yeah, and they do really get along with.
But him, like, oh, I got this sword from the Spanish.
Oh, like,
loser behavior, okay?
Yes, no.
So, loser, but loser.
But I think part of that stuff was, like, as he is, like, there's a lot of posturing, yes, going on as we get into the second half from him.
Yeah.
Where I don't think the, like... I mean, who knows? Like, I guess he was trying to put the sails on the building, but I feel like the sword thing was, like, his own... Like, I'm not sure the version of him at the beginning of the movie would have done the sword thing as sort of douchely as he
But yeah, did. No, I think... But, yeah, the marriage aspect of it all, I think, will always just... It's not necessarily pleasant for me to watch, and I don't know if that's just genre. I'm just like, why... watch these people bicker themselves to literal death. I was just like, get over it.
I thought it was so funny, and I thought the insults were just like incredibly well written. I loved every dig that they were throwing at each other. It's and crazy. I loved it because they're British and they live in the US, like the their friends and stuff are like, are they fighting? Like, it's yeah, like they're, yeah, kind of unclear if it's like mean or just like joking or what's going on. I thought it was great. But I also realized, this is a side tangent, they announced the new SNL cast this week, or like five, there's five new people joining SNL. And so on Twitter, there's been a lot of like, and a lot of these people, you know, are like TikTok comedians or whatever. And so people on Twitter have been like, oh my gosh, like, yes, it's so-and-so. Like, I love this video of him. So I've been watching these videos of these future SNL casts. And I'm like, do I just not, am I like getting too old to understand what this sense of humor is? Because I watch these things and I'm like, I don't get what the joke is. I don't think it's funny. It's like, it's almost not even a joke. It's just kind of like awkward, like whatever, but like, I love Meg Stalter,
yeah,
but this is like not even to that level. I was just like, I don't get any of this. And so then when I was thinking about this, I was like, oh, I was really dialed into The Roses, which apparently lots of people don't think is funny. And now here's all of these SNL people who I'm like, what? Like, barely, like, I'm not cracking a smile at all. And everybody are like, her videos are incredible.
You just have that. So you're just obsessed with Downton Abbey and you're a little British boy at heart, I guess.
My favorite humor is bad people doing bad things. Like, that's my, I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I love What We Do in the Shadows. Like, I just love the sort of like heightened nature of it where it's not real. It's like obviously so bad that it's fake, but I think that that's funny. I think
that's where this doesn't work, because it does feel real. Like, there's a lot.
Well, it worked for me because I thought it was funny. And I was laughing.
I was also really distracted by how not California it was. Like, this is clearly filmed in the UK, right?
There was a village. There was a couple of green screeny kind of things that I did feel like,
It's like the pan over Mendocino.
Yes, it was filmed in Devon.
A village of yesteryear. Yes. Not where Meghan Markle is living. No, that coastline was way too gorgeous for
Shelby
Cali.
Knows the difference between Dorset and the Bay Area.
Yes.
Let the record show.
Not the Bay Area.
Whatever.
They were just
Santa Barbara.
LA. Yeah. No, but it was it was a movie. You know what? My in-laws saw it and they thought it was very funny. So maybe it's just like, maybe it's for.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you think that this was hitting too close to home for you?
Well, maybe. Maybe that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's like, wow, do all marriages end in destructive murder, suicide, accidental murders? Is this my future? And it was just like not comfortable. Whereas someone maybe later in their marriage is like, LOL, we've all been there. You know what I mean? I don't know. Did I feel like it was too relatable? No. But I did feel very burdened by their toxicity. I was just like, ugh, you guys, get it together. Like, honestly, not to mom shame, but like, what do you mean you just are going to let that no dessert contract slide? That's crazy. That's unhinged. This man is making 12-year-olds run 20 miles a day. Absolutely not. So that was not pleasant for me.
I mean, as somebody who did get enrolled in their father's various fitness plans.
I, too, went to the gym with my dad at 5 a.m. every day before high school for a year or so.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe that's a thing, too. I never thought about.
Trauma.
Yeah.
Coming back. It's coming back for you. Trauma. As Jamie Lee Curtis would say.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I guess it's like this, like, why would the kids like him so much compared to their mother? Like, I don't know. There was just like something there with the kids where I'm like, this is clearly just for the joke. But then ultimately they go to this like school, like this boarding school in Florida, I guess. I don't know. I was confused. And now they're orphans. Now they're orphans and they have no equity because the house blew up. So.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it sucks for the kids. I also think that's kind of a funny aspect of the movie, how much the kids suck.
Yeah,
I don't, I mean, marriages are so interesting, and obviously I'm not in one, so they're, you know, like I don't have any firsthand experience, but from watching lots of my friends get married and obviously seeing, you know, my parents and other people's parents and, you know, all of that growing up, it feels like there's so many different things that can go wrong. And it really is such a tenuous structure for something that is so common and that so many people like believe in. Like, I think it's done poorly more often than it's done well, but everybody seems to want to try to do it well, which I don't know. It's just interesting because I think most people aren't, like, most things in life, people don't have that approach to. And I don't know. It's a subject that is interesting to watch movies about. So.
Yeah. I mean, then you have the materialists where it's like, love drives us to want these commitments.
Well, I mean, it does. And that's why people keep trying this, even though it doesn't work a lot of the time.
Yeah, so honestly, you know what movie couples bound for the Fate of the Roses is the materialist couple. So that checks out. That would be an interesting remake come 2045.
I'm intrigued by couples who break up and get back together. Of like, what is the percentage of, oh, you break up and then you figure out sort of what the issue was. And so when you come back a second time, that doesn't happen. And what percentage is, oh, you come back and you realize the same exact problem that you had the first time?
You mean like the materialist kind of breakup, or you mean like a divorce and then remarry, or just any of it?
I guess either way, but like a substantial, not like a, oh, we were broken up for a week, but like a substantial breakup, oh, we've sort of gone on and done different things and now we're coming back together.
Right.
Because in The Materialist, you sort of feel like at the end of the movie when they get back together, okay, they've grown. Hopefully they don't fall into the same issues that they did the first time, especially since it was mostly about money and it seems like they kind of know that now. But I also think that there's a possibility that becomes, because that was the issue before, that just becomes the issue again, because like, it was always going to be like, it would always be an issue between these two people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So now you understand why that relationship is fucked.
In The Materialist?
Yeah.
Well, no, because I am an optimist in that regard. I'm like, I'm choosing to believe that they can change.
You're an optimist, except for when couples just fucking hate each other out loud and proud, viciously, in jokes.
Well, I thought it was fun. I was optimistic that it was a good time for me.
Okay, I see.
The writing is so good, and it, like the way that everything is crafted and the insults and stuff, like I couldn't help but find glee in that.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, they're very, Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman are very watchable in this. They're very, yes.
And they're so good at delivering their lines.
Yeah,
and it also feels like I liked that they are not unattractive people, but it felt like a very sort of like age appropriate, normal people looking marriage.
Yeah.
Which I feel like we don't get very often.
Yeah.
I saw something recently. Oh, the Highest to Lowest, the Spike Lee Denzel Washington movie.
Mm-hmm.
Denzel Washington is married to a woman in that movie who must be like 30 years younger than him. And it's never kind of discussed in a way that...
I mean, like, checked out for a giant CEO of major wealth, right?
Like, it makes sense. Yeah, like, because he was, like, started this record label and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's not presented as, like, a, oh, here's this, like, older rich guy and this is, like, his second wife who's younger or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's never quite presented that way. It's always presented as, like, oh, no, these two people are just, like, in love with each other and they've had a child and whatnot. Like, it's almost presented as if they are the same age, even though it's obviously not. And it was kind of jarring. So I appreciated that in The Roses, it felt like, okay, no, this is an actual couple that would be a couple.
Yeah.
But anyways, anything else to discuss from this movie or just like life, pop culture in general?
No. Are you excited for TIFF?
I'm very excited for TIFF. How many standing ovations
you're missing out on? Or wait, well, where are those?
TIFF doesn't really do standing ovation.
What are all those happening at right now?
Those are in Venice.
The Venice
Film Festival, where the standing ovations are. Yes. So, Venice and Telluride are both ongoing. A lot of those movies will either come to TIFF or New York, which starts the end of the month. And yeah, I'm really excited. The TIFF is always interesting because there's just such a mix of movies. There's like big budget things like Knives Out that, you know, I'm super excited to see that will probably be good. There's movies with big name stars that will be bad. There's, you know, the stuff from Cannes and international, like more arty movies. There's like little tiny Canadian films you've never heard of and will never hear of again. Like there's so many different types of things going on.
Yeah.
And so it's fun to just kind of watch a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Eat some fries.
Eat some poutine. Hodgepodge your way through. I'm also at the point in my career now where I'm finally getting invited to like lots of the good parties. So that is exciting as well. Like I've been invited to, I don't know, like 4 different Netflix parties at this point. And I'm like, okay, I'm excited.
Nice.
Like, I'm ready.
That'll be fun.
But
so no episode then.
Yes, so no episode next week, and then we'll be back the following week, I believe.
Oh, just in time for the Summer I Turn Pretty finale.
Oh, and actually, I extended my stay.
I cannot wait to discuss them all.
I'm not watching 3 seasons of the Summer I Turn Pretty.
How about we do
sorry.
One of those like podcast where the co-host doesn't know anything about it and I just explain it to you.
I'm gonna just sort of mute myself on that and go
fun.
Make a sandwich.
I think that'd be really fun. Blah, blah, blah,
blah. So then Shayna is at the dock and Wilbur comes over.
It's absolutely unhinged. Delicious stuff. I think you would enjoy
it.
Do people care
about the first 2 seasons? I feel like I don't remember it being that big of a deal. And then this season, everybody
it's the final season.
Like,
so everyone was quiet about it, but we were dialed in. And now it's just like the fun is coming to an end. So it's like, final call, you know, everyone's having a good time and it's lasting way too long. It's like 3 episodes too long, honestly. And so everyone's just like, what unhinged thing is going to happen? I think it's just built on itself. You know, the lore of a girl bouncing between 2 brothers, it's pretty hard to resist. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of you for resisting this long, but,
Well, it's because I didn't really even know that people were watching it the first two seasons. Yeah. So I think that's the main issue. But
yeah, it's definitely, things have gotten out of hand.
Okay. Well, I'll let you bring on a guest for next week and you can talk about that while I'm gone.
Yes, will do.
Bring on Rob and then just try not to kill each other.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Thanks everybody for listening to this episode. These are your two favorite English teachers signing off. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. Bye.